Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, September 7th, 2024. Massa Bakery to host grand opening. Odessa. Daniel Morales is a fourth-generation baker who recently branched out on his own and started Massa Bakery. The bakery, 519 Jefferson Avenue in Odessa, immediately offers a homemade, fresh-from-the-oven vibe. As customers enter the store, they can grab a tray and select their favorite freshly baked treats. Later, the items are boxed up for customers. Although the bakery has had a soft opening, the business is planning a grand opening celebration noon to 3 p.m. Saturday. Daniel's wife, Savannah, said there are several family-friendly events planned throughout the day as the business officially kicks off. Quote, Saturday we have our ribbon cutting, end quote, Savannah said. Quote, and then right after that we have some family events, such as tabletop games and an inflatable axe thrower. We are going to have a cornhole and foam party and face painting, end quote. Daniel said his inspiration for the business came from his family. Quote, we have been a family of bakers for a long time, and we just decided to go on our own, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram during an interview. Quote, I have been baking since I was a kid, end quote. His family's bakery, Melody's Bakery in Odessa, was where he first learned the baking skill. For Daniel, he saw firsthand the behind-the-scenes operation of running a bakery. I saw my parents and how hard the bakery business was, end quote, he explained. Quote, because it is a trade and there's not many people that can say, yeah, I can do this and run with it, end quote. Daniel said the trade of being a professional baker is dying out, especially as customers turn to more commercial and corporate types of businesses. He thinks one of the biggest challenges is running his business while also not being an absentee member of his family. Quote, I saw my parents growing up and they were always at the bakery, end quote, he explained. Quote, they were always working and so I didn't want that for me. I have four kids, and so I think that's the biggest challenge, end quote. Despite the challenges the Morales family is certain they will face, they are determined to begin a new chapter with their bakery business. Quote, I think the biggest takeaway from this experience is to work hard, end quote, Daniel said. Quote, you have to be self-motivated. You have to have a vision and really believe in something that's not true. You got to be kind of crazy, end quote. As far as the items that the bakery specializes in, customers can expect a wide array of products, from sweet breads to kolaches to fresh bread to traditional classics such as pink cake, Mexican wedding cookies, conchas, pumpkin empanadas, and piña empanadas. Quote, we can't keep the empanadas stocked, end quote, Daniel and Savannah explained. Quote, they literally fly off the shelf, end quote. Drilling activity continues slump. Drilling activity continued its slump as weak natural gas prices sent gas drilling to a three-year low. Oilfield services provider Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count was down one rig to 582, the lowest level since June. It marks the first four-week decline since late June. The count is down 50 rigs from the 632 rigs active nationwide a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was unchanged at 483, down 30 rigs from 513 a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by one rig to 94, the lowest level since April 2021, and 19 fewer rigs than the 113 seeking natural gas last September. Texas remained unchanged at 274 rigs, down 36 rigs from 310 last year. New Mexico was up one rig for 106 at work across the state. West Virginia, too, joined New Mexico as a major producing state to see a gain. Colorado, 1, Oklahoma, 1, and Pennsylvania, 2, were producing states to see declines. The Permian Basin bucked the trend, gaining one rig for 306 rigs at work across the region, down 14 from 320 a year ago. The Permian was the only major producing basin to see a gain for the week. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian with 53 rigs, up one for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico reported 49 rigs for a second week. Martin County had 32 rigs active within county lines, up one for the week. Reeves County also added a rig for 29 rigs. Midland County gained 3 rigs for 23. Loving County reported 20 rigs, down one for the week. Reagan and Upton counties each reported 14 rigs, down one for Reagan and unchanged for Upton. Energy Dedicated Software as a Service firm in Veris said its U.S. rig count sank 5 rigs to 630 for the week ended August 30th. That's 55 rigs, or 8% below the 685 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for oil fell by 2 to 197 and is 210 rigs, or 52%, below the 407 drilling for oil last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 1 to 93, still 76 rigs, or 45% below the 169 drilling for natural gas last August. The top three operators by rig count were unchanged for the week, with ExxonMobil on top with 39 rigs, ConocoPhillips second with 30 rigs, and EOG Resources in third with 25 rigs. In the Permian Basin, Enverus counted 305 rigs as of the week ended August 30th, down 2 for the week and down 32 rigs, or 9% from 337 a year ago. The most active play, the Delaware, was down 2 rigs to 167 and is down 16 rigs, or 9%, from 183 the previous year. The Midland Basin was down 1 rig to 114 and is down 12 rigs, or 10%, from 126 a year ago. Looking at trailing 30-day drilling permits, Enverus said the Permian had 786 as of the week ended August 16th, up from 753 the previous week and 738 a year earlier. Enverus said the Permian had 105 frac crews as of the week ended August 16th, up from 88 the previous week, but down from 120 a year earlier. Taylor Sheridan's Landman premieres November 17th, featuring Billy Bob Thornton, Demi Moore, and John Hamm. Move over, J.R. Ewing, there's a new oil executive in town. For those who may have missed it, the trailer for Taylor Sheridan's Landman television series was released Thursday via the Paramount Network. The first episode of the television series showcasing the Permian Basin is set to debut on November 17th with a star-studded cast featuring Billy Bob Thornton, Demi Moore, and John Hamm. Another actor, 27-year-old Ashton Aguilar of Pecos, got his start via the show where he was cast as a background oil man. During a recent interview with the Reporter Telegram, Aguilar said the difference between portraying an oil man on television and working on an oil rig was not a huge stretch. He said one thing remained the same, the early morning call times. Quote, it's a surreal feeling because it was the same time in the morning. But 2 years before, I was actually getting up at 4:30 a.m. in a man camp, waiting with the other guys. Now everybody's just actors, end quote, he said in March. Another key similarity between reality and the television series is that Aguilar believed most background oil men in the show were or had worked in a real oil field at some point. As far as the show description, the West Texas series is said to be, quote, set in the proverbial boom towns of West Texas, end quote, and is described as a, quote, a modern-day tale of fortune-seeking in the world of oil rigs, an upstairs-downstairs story of roughnecks and wildcat billionaires fueling a boom so big it's reshaping our climate, our economy, and our geopolitics, end quote. For the cast, Thornton plays the role of landman Tommy Norris. His voice can be heard opening the trailer with a voiceover narration. Quote, the oil and gas industry makes $3 billion a day in pure profit, and it's only getting bigger, end quote. Another feature of the trailer shows a scene that most West Texans are familiar with. There's a pickup truck cruising through an oil field adjacent to an enormous drilling rig. Thornton's voiceover adds to the mystique of the show by announcing his role in the series. Quote, before any of that money is made, you gotta secure the land and manage the people, end quote. Thornton's character, Norris, explains to the audience. Quote, that's my job. The first part's pretty simple. It's the second part that can get you killed, end quote. Seven Questions with Lee Sanchez, owner of Sip House and Lisco's. Lee Sanchez is a nurse practitioner who co-owns a medical spa, Sculpt House, where he works. However, that's not all that the Midland native does. Sanchez also brought two passion projects to Midland, Sip House and Lisco's, two bars in the downtown scene. The nurse practitioner and business owner is full of ideas that he wants to bring to Midland, which can be seen in the bars and on their cocktail menus. The Reporter Telegram asked Sanchez seven questions about what it's like being a bar owner. How do you make your drinks? When we come up with our menu, what we'll do is we'll get a couple of our best bartenders and their managers together. And we all have a base. Typically, I have a base of what I want to make, and then we'll kind of experiment with it. Then I'll do a taste test, and we'll tweak it to where we feel like it's best for us and our customers. I'm not actually making drinks, but I do have a lot to do with the outcome of the menu. What's the most common drink ordered at Sip House and Lisco's? I don't think you can print the names of these drinks. Sip House menu includes cocktails with ribald names. At Sip House, we have a fall menu right now, and the most popular drink is a cocktail that resembles horchata. How do you come up with the names for your drinks? I feel like we've always tried to go for a bigger city vibe, so I feel like when it comes to drink names, we want something that will appeal to the masses, but also will stand out in the crowd, something that is eye-catching. More importantly, that the menu is something that catches people's attention on social media. If somebody asks you to surprise them, what drink are you suggesting? It really depends on who's asking, but if it's a random person, I would probably suggest the espresso martini. Our espresso martini is probably our number one all around. I think it's not overly sweet, and it's fresh espresso. I think it makes a little bit of a difference in its freshness, and we use a whipped cream as well. So I think it's one of those things that if someone wants to be surprised, you're going to win no matter what. What's the most random request a customer has made at one of the bars? The first thing that came to mind was that we've had a lot of parents ask if they can rent out Sip House. Whenever we do pop-ups, they want to rent it out for their kids, like our Christmas pop-up. Of course, we usually say no because we're 21 and up. We've had people who want to rent it out for their proposals or they want to do their engagement photos there. So we got a lot of really cool photo shoots, like maternity shoots. We got a baby shower hosted there, but I think for the most part, it's people just liking the space and vibes in there. So that's probably the most common request. What's the most memorable event that's been held at Sip House? The Christmas Crawl. It's the biggest event all year long. It's a collaborative event with a bunch of local bars, and we host it. I feel like it's just a really cool community event because everybody goes from bar to bar, and they're all in the spirit of their Christmas sweaters, and it's just a really good vibe down there. Lisco's and Sip House both have a different vibe. Is that something you see in the customers as well? Absolutely. It's funny you say that because I just had a friend earlier that asked me why sometimes I prefer going to Lisco's if typically Sip House is where I'm at. I told him because usually at Lisco's, I don't know anybody who's in there. I don't recognize any face. There's a ton of people that are always running through there, and it's always a different vibe every night. It's a different crowd. You never know what you expect at Lisco's. Whereas at Sip House, I feel like I always see that my friends and colleagues will go there. I feel like sometimes it's nice to just, you know, see a different crowd every night. Bonus question, what's next? St. Blaise, it's our latest project. It's a restaurant that will be on Wall Street across from the Petroleum Club. We are going to do like an American fusion type cafe that will also have a full service bar. So we're really excited about that because we want to offer a casual, fun place. It has good menu options for breakfast and lunch and dinner. Obviously, it's nothing too fancy and nothing too casual, just a good in-between. We're really focusing on the dishes. The food is good, the dining is going to be really nice, but it's nothing too pretentious. Hopefully, it will be here sometime in November or December. Midland awarded $8.66 million to improve La Mesa Road corridor. The City of Midland has been awarded a grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation for the implementation of a project outlined in the City's Vision Zero Comprehensive Safety Account Plan, CSAP. USDOT reported this week that the Midland has been awarded the $8.66 million in fiscal year 2024 Safe Streets and Roads for All, SS4A, implementation grant, funding for improvements along the La Mesa Road corridor and citywide signal retiming. Proposed safety improvements are estimated to reduce total crashes by 618 over a 20-year period on La Mesa Road, between Business 20 and Gist Avenue. 41% of bicycle and pedestrian crashes citywide have occurred along this corridor. Signal timing will be updated on all intersections citywide to create a complete system to promote citywide safety and efficiency. Midland's Vision Zero Comprehensive Safety Action Plan fits in with the city's strategic plan by setting the standard for a safe and secure city, improving the quality of life and place, providing sound governance and fiscal management. Odessa police search for missing 21-year-old woman. A 21-year-old woman from Odessa is missing. The Odessa Police Department confirmed they are searching for Ariana Rose Muniz. Muniz is reported as being 5 feet 6 inches tall and weighing approximately 180 pounds. Muniz does not have a vehicle. Anyone with information about her whereabouts is encouraged to call Detective Kay Thompson at 432-335-4609. Or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 24-0010148. Mainly Midland. Celebrate literacy, support local initiatives. September is Library Card Sign-Up Month. Whether upgrading your skills, scouting for knowledge and information, or connecting with other readers, a library card is the key to an arsenal of resources. Spark your creativity by attending free library programming or mine the library stacks and databases for new stories and adventures. Library users can even kickstart their critical thinking skills to defend themselves against misinformation lurking online. Visit the library website for more information. Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin celebrates National Literacy Month. On Saturday, LCPB is partnering with the West Texas Food Bank for a power bag packing party from 9 to 11:30 a.m. in Midland, where volunteers will pack literacy materials for local hospitals. On September 18th, LCPB will be at Barrio Fest in Fort Stockton from 8:30 to 11:30 a.m., handing out free books to children. Subgrant applications are open until September 30th, offering funding for literacy providers or programs. Current and potential members are encouraged to apply. For more information, visit the organization's website at www.literacypb.org. UTPB Athletics Giving Day. UTPB is set to host their first ever Athletics Giving Day on Tuesday at noon. The 24-hour online giving campaign allows the community to come together to support student-athlete needs both on and off the field. Many UTPB teams have had successful seasons this past year by breaking program records and winning championships. No gift is too big or too small. All donations have a meaningful impact on the athletes. Visit https://givingday.utpb.edu for more information. Oil prices crash below $70 a barrel. Bears were unleashed on the oil markets this week as reports OPEC Plus was delaying its production increase could not overcome fears about a weakening U.S. economy. A weak jobs report Friday compounded those concerns about the economy and the impact on oil demand. West Texas Intermediate fell all four trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Prices opened a holiday-shortened trading week, plunging $3.21, followed by a $1.14 drop Wednesday. Prices fell $1.48, or 2.1% Friday, to close at $67.67, the lowest level since June 2023, and down 8% from $73.75 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $64.15, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures rose 3 or 4 trading days on the NYMEX, opening the week with a 7.6-cent rise and highlighted by a 12-cent jump Thursday. Futures ended the week at 2.266 per MCF, up from 2.121 at last Friday's close. Traders are also watching OPEC Plus moves amid concerns of a potential market oversupply, according to a new S&P Global Commodity Insights analysis. The updated analysis assumes OPEC and its allied nations will increase production by a cumulative 1.4 million barrels per day, B/D, by late 2025 compared with third quarter 2024. S&P Global Commodity Insights expects world crude oil and condensate production growth of 2.3 million barrels per day in 2025, far exceeding projected crude oil and condensate demand growth, including direct use of crude oil of around 550,000 barrels per day. Quote, in 2024, OPEC Plus production cuts offset production growth elsewhere. Now, with some of those cuts poised to go away, will OPEC Plus choose volume over price and no longer defend prices around $80 per barrel? The answer is coming soon, end quote, wrote Jim Burkhard, Vice President and Head of Research for Oil Markets, Energy, and Mobility. Phil Flynn, author of The Energy Report, wrote Friday he believes bearish calls on oil prices are too bearish, quote, and we have seen all these sharp types of sell-offs in oil before, flipping the bulls into bears only to flip them again, end quote. Quote, we believe the Fed rate cuts along with more economic stimulus from China will keep oil demand humming. If we get a cold winter, global distillate inventories and European gas inventories will be wiped away. Look to use this break to position or at least hedge because, as Dr. Doom and the King of Crude War, we could see the mother of all oil price spikes, end quote, he wrote. Permian Electric Reliability Plan nears final steps. This month, the 5 Public Utility Commission of Texas commissioners will consider and vote on a final Permian Basin Electric Reliability Plan as proposed by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. The plan was put into motion last year when the Texas legislature passed and Governor Greg Abbott signed House Bill 5066 requiring the PUC and ERCOT to address the Permian Basin's future electricity needs. It was passed in recognition of the importance of the Permian Basin's energy industry to the state, country, and world, said PUC Commissioner Lori Cabos. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram, she said the goal of the reliability plan is to ensure the electricity needs of the region are met. Those needs come not only from the oil and gas industry, but other industries. Some large electricity users like hydrogen producers, crypto miners, and data centers, as well as the broader community at large, she said. Those needs come not only from oil and gas industry, but other industries. Some large electricity... Quote, the focus is on oil and gas growth. As that vital industry grows, surrounding communities grow as people come to work, and that benefits everyone as more businesses in general are opened, end quote, she explained. The plan submitted by ERCOT includes new and expanded transmission lines, substations, and equipment to strengthen local area transmission. It also includes options for importing power into the area if needed, such as high-voltage lines. Quote, the plan will allow for the continued growth and success of the oil and gas industry and communities as they grow and generate more venues, end quote, she said. It will require billions of dollars invested in additional transmission capacity and a process that could take 5 to 7 years, Cabos said. Funding will come from the broader community of ratepayers in the ERCOT service area, she said. Quote, our job at the PUC is to ensure the plan provides the greatest level of reliability at the lowest cost. Everyone benefits from what the Permian Basin contributes to the state's gross domestic product, end quote, Cabo stated. She noted that the Permian Basin holds 2% of the state's population, but is responsible for 10% of the GDP. So when oil and gas is strong, the state is strong, she said. A 2022 load
forecast developed by S&P Global projects growth in peak oil and gas-related demand of 11,964 megawatts in 2030 and 14,705 megawatts in 2039. As the industry expands into the Delaware Basin and other areas of the Permian Basin and works towards its goal of electrifying operations to meet sustainability goals and regulatory requirements. Beyond that, non-oil and gas demand is forecast to grow by 11,695 megawatts in 2030 and 2038. Once the commissioners approve the plan, Cabos said companies responsible for building independent projects within the plan will begin preparing applications for certificates for construction, and she expects the first wave of applications to arrive in early 2025. The process that began a year ago has been a collaboration between the PUC, ERCOT, transmission companies, and the various stakeholders throughout the Permian Basin, she said. She expressed gratitude for all the hard work stakeholders have put into bringing the plan to fruition. Oil Report, WTGS organizing annual fall symposium. Members of the West Texas Geological Society are preparing for their annual fall symposium. This year's event is September 18th through 19th at the Bush Convention Center in downtown Midland. Two short courses will precede the symposium on September 17th. The title of this year's symposium is, quote, Permian Basin 101, end quote. And will feature presentations, case histories, and poster sessions covering, quote, a smattering, end quote, of what's going on in the Permian Basin's subsurface. The symposium opens on the 18th with a keynote address from Tim McMahon, project manager at the University of Texas, speaking on shale in a nutshell, an overview of the major shale plays in the U.S. Quote, there are a lot of great folks doing great work, and this is an opportunity, especially for smaller operators and consultants, to talk with the larger operators, end quote. Said Christopher Smith with WTGS. He said the symposium sold out its exhibit space even earlier than last year, indicating they think the symposium is a source of important information, quote, especially if they're spending money early and upfront, end quote. WTGS will celebrate its centennial next year, and in preparation will host a 100-year core workshop featuring cores from early discoveries dating back to 1920. The WTGS is also looking ahead, offering a presentation by Graham Spence with GeoMark comparing the Woodford and Barnett systems in the Permian, two intervals beginning to attract development from Permian Basin operators. This year, the field trip precedes the symposium and will be September 13th through 16th from Van Horn to the southern Guadalupe Mountains. Odessa hosting public session in De La Express Pipeline. Area residents with questions or concerns about the proposed De La Express Pipeline are invited to a scoping session in Odessa next week. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission will host the meeting at the Lawndale Community Center, 9201 Rainbow Drive, from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 10th. FERC defines, quote, scoping, end quote, as a process of gathering public input and comments about a proposed natural gas pipeline project. The process includes a public comment period and in-person public commenting opportunities. Federal law requires FERC to seek and consider public comments as part of the decision-making process. Members of FERC's Office of Public Participation will be on hand at the session to answer questions about the project. Moss Lake Partners is planning a 645.5-mile-long, 42-inch diameter natural gas pipeline originating in Winkler County and ending in Calcasieu Parish, Louisiana, moving 2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas. FERC will prepare an environmental document discussing the environmental impacts of the project in Midland and Ector counties, as well as Reeves, Loving, Andrews, Ward, Winkler, Upton, Glasscock, Sterling, Koch, Runnels, Coleman, Brown, Mills, Hamilton, Coryell, McLennan, Falls, Bell, Robertson, Milam, Brazos, Grimes, Montgomery, Walker, San Jacinto, Liberty, Hardin, Jefferson, and Orange in Texas, and Calcasieu Parish, Louisiana. The project also includes 6 pipeline laterals and 6 electric-driven compressor stations. The Odessa station is one of 11 FER. The Odessa session is one of 11 FERC will hold at different towns along the pipeline route. The public can comment at the scoping session online at the comment feature at www.ferc.gov or mail to Debbie Ann A. Reese, Acting Secretary, FERC, 888 First Street NE, Room 1A, Washington, D.C., 20426. Deadline for written comments is September 23, 2024. New ranking of drillers helps measure efficiency. In the drive to improve cost and operational efficiencies, energy companies are looking for tools to measure their performance. Energy dedicated software as a service firm Enverus has launched what it believes to be one such tool. A list of top drillers and customer rankings in the U.S., as well as detailed drilling rig analytics. Quote, as a source, you want to measure yourself against your peers. How am I on well count? How do I stack up on footage per day? End quote, explained Mark Chapman, Principal Analyst, OFS at Enverus Intelligence Research. For exploration and production companies, the rankings offer a way to show stockholders how efficient they are and tells the companies how to leverage footage per day, how to get the most out of the number of rigs the company is running. Helmerich & Payne topped the list of drillers with 15.4 million lateral feet in the first quarter, followed by Patterson UTI Drilling with 9.4 million feet. Chapman noted that bigger doesn't always mean better in the rankings. For example, the top two drillers are ExxonMobil and EOG Resources, who combined drilled 8.23 million feet during the first quarter of the year. Quote, Exxon was able to leverage big pads and generate a lot of production. EOG was able to do a lot with a lot less rigs than Exxon. The fact EOG did that with 20% fewer rigs is a great feat for them, end quote, he said. A surprising trend his company has noticed over the last 12 months to 2 years has been the fact 20 to 25% of the nation's horizontal rigs have been laid down, yet the amount of lateral footage drilled has remained flat to slightly up, according to Chapman. Quote, that's complementary to the drillers and EAP companies, end quote, he said. Quote, it's amazing they're able to keep the total lateral footage flat to slightly up, end quote. Consolidation among E&P companies has contributed to efficiencies, he said. But the downside is, quote, 1 + 1 = 2, at least for drillers, end quote. He said he expects such efficiency gains from fewer rigs to continue, but not forever. Quote, I do believe we have hit bottom and rigs will be coming back with the rise of liquefied natural gas exports and gas-directed drilling, end quote. Chapman explained, predicting more rigs will be put back to work in 2025. But efficiencies will suffer short-term as new crews learn both the work and how to work together. Quote, there's always growing pains and we always seem to overcome them, end quote, he said. TXOGA and PRSC highlight road safety at Andrew's event. Road safety throughout the Permian Basin is a top priority as large oil field trucks share the road with school buses, church vans, and family sedans. That focus on improving road safety was highlighted recently when the Permian Road Safety Coalition teamed up with the Texas Oil and Gas Association to host a road safety luncheon in Andrews. Quote, the goal is a day without a fatality, so at the end of the day, everyone can safely go home to their families, end quote. Todd Staples, president of TXOGA, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. While much improvement is needed, Staples said the coalition has been leading on road safety, with crashes falling 22% from 2022 to 2023, and fatalities down 3.9% during that time. Still, Department of Public Safety Sergeant Stephen Blanco told the luncheon, the region continues to lead the state in crashes and fatalities. As the Permian Basin's upstream industry focuses on efficiencies and making their operations competitive, safety is part of that effort, he said. And one of the tools to enhance efficiencies and improve safety is insurance, he said. TXOGA Insurance Agency President Neil Carlton and Eric Berquin, Vice President of Safety Services with Texas Mutual, participated in the event. Staples, the intent was to highlight the economic benefits of road safety efforts, not only on companies in the form of insurance rates, but on communities as well. TXOGA has a workers' compensation safety group that, along with Texas Mutual and the Texas Department of Insurance, provide safety resources and tools to improve a workplace safety. Quote, we look for ways to engage more companies and make them aware of the benefits of being engaged in safety efforts, end quote, said Staples, who serves on the Coalition's advisory board and is president of TXOGA's Worker Compensation Safety Group. Similar events will be held in different communities this fall, he said. Kicking off the luncheon was a mock inspection of a big rig by a Texas Department of Public Safety trooper, offering guidelines on what DPS looks for during their inspections and why such procedures are in place. Staples said this attracted a lot of interest from attendees. State Representative Tom Craddock and State Senator Kevin Sparks, both of Midland, participated in a discussion of the role the Permian Basin contributes to the economy and the need for funding infrastructure such as roads and electricity to continue those contributions. TXOGA has launched a series of safety talks companies can use as part of morning safety meetings or weekly safety meetings. They include steps that can save not only a worker's life, but the lives of those working around them, Staples said. Quote, we're all in this together. We have a responsibility to our families and others to be safe, end quote, said Staples. He added he knows firsthand how accidents can impact families, having lost his grandfather in an accident.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, September 7th, 2024. The Gloves Are Off in City Feud by Kim Smith. The feud between city officials and former Odessa Development Corporation Vice President Jeff Russell turned downright vicious Thursday when Russell took to his social media platform and painted city manager John Beckmeyer and Beckmeyer's wife as Machiavellian characters, so ruthless they'll use race and city resources as a means to further their political ambitions. Beckmeyer flatly denied Russell's allegations. I'm actually flattered that Jeff Russell has given me a lot of unearned political prowess, Beckmeyer said. I really haven't been involved in the campaigns. He said, John and everybody is at this meeting at John's house. I was there because it was my house. As for his wife, Beckmeyer said she doesn't try to affect city business. He said for years they've successfully been able to separate her job as senior political advisor for the Salisbury family from his jobs. I truly have one goal, and that is to do the work of the citizens of Odessa at the direction of the city council. There's been things she could have influence and hasn't, Beckmeyer said. We've had to keep that separation for years because even when I was with the Republican Party of Texas, the Salisburys didn't always agree with what my boss was doing at that point. You quickly learn when you're in a political family like that. You don't let it affect the job you're doing. Last month, the Odessa City Council removed Russell from his post just a few weeks after firing ODC President Chris Crow in a dispute over the ODC's portion of sales tax revenue and whether it can be spent on the city's failing infrastructure. The men issued a news release accusing the council of knowingly trying to use the money illegally. Mayor Javier Jovan responded with a post on the city's Facebook page, stating Crow and Russell were using the ODC as their personal political and economic organization. On Thursday, Russell posted an article in his Odessa headlines alleging the Beckmeyers provided strategy and guidance to local Republican Party precinct chairs prior to the March primaries, but they've now turned their eyes toward November's city council races. He said the couple are blurring the lines between city employment, public service, and political manipulation. Russell alleges John Beckmeyer and Teresa Beckmeyer are also determined to get Jovan reelected. They signed off on a plan crafted by out-of-town political consultant Matt Armstrong that included staging divisive events to provoke anger among Hispanic voters and drive them to support Jovan. As proof of that plan, Russell posted a copy of an email he said was written by Teresa Beckmeyer, summing up a March meeting he said was held at the Beckmeyers' home and attended by both Beckmeyers, himself, and Armstrong, as well as Bubba Salisbury, who attended via Zoom. Item one on the list of strategies for the mayor's race was Hispanic voters, business leaders, owners' awareness of importance to keep Javier, public events, speaking events, Russell reported. Listed under the heading of City of Odessa was 1. Social media more reach. Set the narrative. The email also included the following. Candidate problem. Number 1. Come out publicly or drop out and let us find a new candidate. Russell stated in his article that was in reference to Councilman Mark Mata writing inappropriate texts to a City of Odessa firefighter's wife, which Mata would later admit to in a Facebook video. Beckmeyer said he did have conversations with Odessa Fire and Rescue Chief Jason Cotton about Mata and the texts, but was left satisfied the situation hadn't caused any problems within the city. I appreciate that Mark Mata came out and went public with it and asked for forgiveness for it, Beckmeyer said. He's a bigger man than many for doing that, but it's had no effect on the city. It's not a city issue. Russell said that during a second meeting in March, the Beckmeyers confirmed Armstrong would also help Mata and council member Denise Swanner with their campaigns and form several political action committees. The Beckmeyers, along with Armstrong, were committed to using racially charged tactics to sway the election in favor of their chosen candidates, Russell said in a Thursday article. John Beckmeyer acknowledged campaign strategy meetings were held at his house and said he offers his opinion when asked, but he would do that for any candidate. In fact, he said, he tries to go to every campaign event regardless of whose it is. However, he added that he doesn't try to influence anyone. I'm really not involved in the campaigns. It's not my business to be involved, he said. My business is the City of Odessa. Beckmeyer insisted he's not very political. Even with the Republican Party, I wasn't very political. I went out and I tried to get a job done, he said. I did fundraising. I dealt with all factions of the Republican Party and dealt well with them. Beckmeyer denied there were any discussions about promoting racial discord, but said there were discussions about Odessa's large Hispanic population. We have the first Hispanic mayor, he said. So would he not be justified in trying to pull the Hispanic population? It would be the same as if it was the first African-American mayor. Beckmeyer said if there were any plots about race, it would be to bring the races together. That doesn't even make sense. Not in this day and age, Beckmeyer said of Russell's allegations. In an interview, Russell said he doesn't have any written documentation about how the group planned to create racial division, but pointed to a Jovan Facebook video as proof the plan is being carried out. It's this whole kind of nasty New York Democrat-style deal of, you know, I'm Hispanic and I've been oppressed by the white guys and the rich white elites that have ruled Odessa and they want to take us back to that, Russell said. Just watch the video. It is just laced with really ugly racial overtones in what I believe is an effort to stir up Hispanics. Beckmeyer said Jovan, Mata, and Swanner are running their own campaigns with the help of Armstrong. The first required financial filings by the candidates did not list any expense related to Armstrong. Mr. Russell talks about Matt Armstrong. That's their resource. It's not my wife, Beckmeyer said. Beckmeyer said he suspects his relationship with Russell and Crow began to sour when he declined to terminate some employees they wanted him to fire. Russell denied ever pushing for anyone to be fired. Russell also pointed out in his article that many people suspect Jovan, Mata, and Swanner's campaign videos were made using city resources. While writing about Jovan's Facebook response to their news release, Russell said the city's communication apparatus appeared to have been weaponized to serve the political interests of Beckmeyer and his allies. Russell called upon the city council to stop any abusive use of taxpayer-funded resources by Beckmeyer and should also appoint a special committee to investigate the extent to which the Beckmeyers are attempting to tip the scales in the current council elections. Beckmeyer said city resources were not used in the making of the campaign videos. As for Jovan's statement on Facebook regarding the removal of Russell and Crow from the ODC, I approved that because we felt like the attack was made at the council, not any individuals. Maybe I should have looked at it in a different way, but we felt like we needed to defend the council and their actions. The city manager said that if Russell's article was a reaction to being removed from the ODC, his anger is misdirected. He had nothing to do with the removal of Russell or Crow and said he only looked into using ODC's portion of sales tax revenues for infrastructure improvements at the council's direction. The article is not a result of sour grapes over the loss of his position on the ODC, Russell said. He also rejected the idea that he's upset that he is no longer among an elite group of powerful players. Russell said the only organization he was a part of was the Ector County Republican Party leadership group that existed before an effort championed by Odessan Ronnie Lewis ousted so many local GOP precinct chairs. That was the organization I was involved in, he said. That was the organization that really tried to promote conservative values and things in our community. Russell said he never thought they'd play out the racial division strategy, but once he saw evidence of it, that was the final straw for him. He said that it was when he decided to write his article. Odessa voters need to research what is going on before heading to the polls, Russell said. I would like to, at some point in my life, to elect or help elect somebody that when they get elected to office, they don't become a dadgum politician. They just get in there and work hard and do their job and let the re-election worry about the re-election, Russell said. This is what happens when you get people in there. They become politicians. What I see is a lot of scheming and conniving and manipulation. They're trying to do things to get people set up for re-election. Enhancing Health and Wellness, UTPB Launches Fitness Court, by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin has added another fitness feature to its campus, the Fitness Court. An official ribbon cutting was held Thursday. The court has been set up for a few weeks and people have been using it. On the other side of the fitness court is a floor that can be used for yoga classes, for example. Senior Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, Becky Spurlock, said Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and the National Fitness Campaign approached UTPB and said they had identified the campus as a prime space for a fitness court. The total project cost is $262,500, including UTPB's portion of $222,500 and a National Fitness Campaign sponsor grant of $40,000. We are so excited about this fitness court, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said. What it represents to the university is our commitment to enhancing health and wellness in the community. So many of us care about all of the things that make our lives better. The fitness court is located near our beautiful walking trails. We see so many people in our community using those. As you all know, we have a $6.5 million grant where we're about to really add to those trails, so this fitness court will be a premium spot on that trail for the community to use, Woodley said. She noted that you can download the Fitness Court app and it will give you ideas on workouts. We encourage you to take advantage of this beautiful resource, whether it's a 7-minute workout or a yoga class, or if you want to do a much more dedicated experience to wellness through the Fitness Court app. We want to make sure that you have that available to you. You can download these free workouts. You just search Fitness Court and then you'll have all of the ideas that you need to take advantage of this, Woodley said. She expressed thanks to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas and National Fitness Campaign for helping UTPB offer this really amazing high-quality fitness opportunity for this community. Woodley also thanked UTPB officials and others who worked on the project, and also Spurlock, because it was her idea. Her team worked with Blue Cross and National Fitness Campaign to make this a reality, Woodley said. Spurlock said space matters whether it's the right space to learn, the right space to study, or space to exercise and hang out. It makes a tremendous difference in the quality of life of our community and in our students' lives. We are so proud to add this fitness court to our other outdoor recreation spaces, including our sand volleyball court, our outdoor basketball court, as Dr. Woodley mentioned, our trail system, our intramural fields, so many spaces that make our campus life fun and make it a great place to be, Spurlock said. I want to also offer a special thanks to our colleagues in Human Resources who have launched our fantastic Falcon Fitness program that so many of you choose to participate in. They've been a wonderful partner to us, and this is an important resource for our employees as well, and our new year at Falcon Fitness kicks off next week. It's perfect timing for you to register for that program and be ready to have fun out here on our trail system and in our courts, Spurlock said. She added that the fitness court is a great addition to the campus. We have so much more ahead with our campus transformation, and I can't wait to see all the ways our campus grows to serve our community better, Spurlock said. Mallory Sumner, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas director, said on the average, 1 in 2 adults don't get enough physical activity in their day-to-day lives, which can lead to chronic yet preventable conditions. We at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas and with the National Fitness Campaign saw a need to reduce barriers to improving physical and mental health, Sumner said. In 2022, we joined the National Fitness Campaign, which is the organization that brings all of this funding together, to bring up to 40 outdoor fitness courts to communities across Texas. This fitness court is the 26th of those 40, and we are excited to complete this initiative by the end of 2024, Sumner said. Pfluger Landgraf offers state and national updates. U.S. Representative August Pfluger gave an update on his activities in Washington during his coffee with the congressman at Los Tóxicos Cantina Friday. The event also featured remarks by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican of Odessa, who offered a review of state legislative activities. Officials from local government, law enforcement, University of Texas Permian Basin, and the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, along with a smattering of community members, turned out. Since he got into office, Pfluger said he has tried to highlight and educate his colleagues about the Permian Basin and what goes on out here. There's been a war that has been declared on American energy, and I'm not okay with it. I know y'all are not okay with it. As your representative in D.C., we've been educating our colleagues not just on the Republican side, but on the other side of the aisle as well to tell them that what we do in the Permian Basin throughout West Texas into New Mexico, this is a national security issue, Pfluger said. He added that he was talking to someone at the gathering about the Environmental Protection Agency and how they may have overreached. We are actually doing a great job of reducing emissions. We are actually doing a great job of producing clean natural gas that we get to send all throughout the United States and to our allies abroad. As an update for that, I think that we are gaining momentum, Pfluger said. He was somewhat surprised by Vice President Kamala Harris's flip-flop on fracking. 4 years ago, she said she didn't like fracking, and now she is saying it's okay. I'm not sure where she stands on it. I think I know because the policies have been anti-domestic production, but in one way or another, everybody in this room is tied to the production of American energy, Pfluger said. That American energy fuels the economy, it underpins our economy, and it's a national security issue, he said. Pfluger said he has pressed the administration on refilling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve for the last 2.5 years. There is a threshold price-wise and quantity-wise that they should start refilling it, and they've hit that threshold many times. But there has been no real update on when they are going to make a concerted effort to refill it. He said he's convinced it's going to take a change of administration to get serious about this matter. Pfluger said the country has $35 trillion in debt, and that is going to be saddled to our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids if we don't get that under control. There will be a continuing resolution put on the House floor, and with that, the spending levels will be flat compared to where they were for March for fiscal year 2024. That's a big deal because we are trying to move the needle and get back into a manageable situation, Pfluger said. He added that next year the debt will exceed what it spent on the military. That's crazy. It will be over $1 trillion just to service the interest on our debt, Pfluger said. This summer, Pfluger said he got a chance to serve as a reserve officer. He went overseas and served alongside many of his colleagues that he had previously known. Pfluger said he was so thankful to those who are still willing to volunteer. There are people from Odessa that in the last couple of years have raised their hands that are serving in the military. Many of you served, or you support people in your family and your friends that serve. I was inspired to see that the people that are willing to stand up and do that today. There's a lot going on. We live in a dangerous world. From what's happening in Europe, you had a country that was invaded by another country. People don't think that can happen in 2024, but it has. He visited the Middle East and saw some of the bases that he had previously been stationed at, and the U.S. was ready. You think about that and you think about what's going on with the Chinese Communist Party. These people, these countries, want to undermine the United States of America. They don't want us to be strong, Pfluger said. He added that he was inspired by the servicemen and women, but at the same time the political leadership has distracted them from focusing on the threats. Pfluger said the leadership is dividing the military by religion, race, and ethnicity. He doesn't blame the junior members, but he's looking at the politically appointed members. We should be celebrating the fact that we are all Americans, he said. The best way to avoid conflict, he added, is to prepare for it. Landgraf reported that Texas' economy continues to be robust, which means that the situation heading into 2025 is looking good. What that means for all of us is there's a chance we are looking at another multi-billion dollar budget surplus, which we'd rather have than that what California, which is a multi-billion dollar budget deficit, Landgraf said. He wants to give back as many tax dollars as possible to the taxpayers in the form of tax cuts, as was done in 2023, and he is looking to do that in 2025. Landgraf said that the state has removed more than 1 million ineligible voters from the voter rolls. That's all been done in the last 3 years thanks to some election integrity legislation that we enacted in 2021 and 2023, Landgraf said. He added that everyone in Texas needs to go out and vote and know that their vote is going to count. VFW Post 4372 hosts community events. Memorial Car Show, Clay Shoot used to help raise funds. By Nathaniel Miller. Veteran of Foreign Wars Post 4372, looking to continue its community outreach in Ector County, has two scheduled events for the public. The 6th Annual Brantley Mitchell Memorial Truck Show is scheduled from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. September 14th at the VFW Post, 208 East VFW Lane. At 8 a.m. October 4th, the 2nd Annual VFW Post 4372 Clay Shoot Competition will be held at the Midland Shooters Association, 7400 West County Road 140. Both events are open to the public. Just like any other nonprofit, we rely on sponsorships and donations so we can give back to the community, Rick Mitchell said, commander for VFW Post 4372. The car show is held to honor Mitchell's son, Brantley Mitchell, who died in 2019 after a motorcycle accident in West Odessa. The event is $20 for entry. In 2023, awards were given to a Diesel Champion, Fan Favorite, Muscle Car Competition, and Best in Show. He was fearless, so we've been doing this car show in his name, Mitchell said. After the success of their inaugural clay shoot, the VFW Post 4372 Clay Shoot Competition was brought back to act as a fundraiser. Raising about $7,000 in 2023, Mitchell is hoping this year's event is bigger. The entry prize is $200 for an individual or $800 for a team of four. Sponsorship opportunities are also available. Mitchell said the events also help make the community aware of Post 4372 and how they work with veterans. Since June, the VFW Auxiliary has hosted a morning breakfast for veterans and the community. In July, the Post hosted a 4th of July event. Mitchell also organized and delivered relief with the Heroes for Herds, delivering items in April to areas affected by the Smokehouse Creek fire. Since their community outreach efforts have grown, Mitchell said he has seen an increase in members of the community attending their events, especially during their bingo nights. People understand that we are here, and we are not going anywhere, he said. We are always here to help the community. UTPB to host first Athletics Giving Day. University of Texas Permian Basin is set to have its first Athletic Giving Day September 10th. For a 24-hour period from noon September 10th to noon September 11th, people can give to support teams and raise money for scholarships, Director of Annual Giving Jorge Payen said. UTPB has 14 athletic teams. This will be our first Athletics Giving Day. We've noticed that other universities have attempted this as well and have much success in it, given that our current VP of Advancement, Sandy Bliss, came from a university that started this tradition over at their school recently, so we decided to adopt that same concept here. Hopefully it's a huge success, Bayan said. People can give in multiple ways through offline gifts by mailing or bringing a check into the Advancement office and letting them know where they would like the funds to go, or they can go online to givingday.utpb.edu. There will be a kickoff event from noon to 3 p.m. at the D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center. Some of the athletic teams will be on hand. We'll have our new athletic director and president Sandra Woodley be in attendance, and we are hoping to secure a company to come out that's supplementing one of the challenges for the Athletics Giving Day to do a check presentation, Bayan said. There will be an athletic director challenge. It's a team challenge. Whichever team brings in the most donor percentage to the university during Giving Day will receive a $20,000 contribution to their team. We are working on a couple of other challenges. We haven't released any information on those just because we haven't finished securing them. But once we do, we'll definitely let that information out. As far as hidden items, we will be doing a VIP pass scavenger hunt. We'll be having VIP passes around which students can then find and enter for a chance to raffle for a ultimate athletic swag pack, Bayan said. The athletic swag pack will have different items donated by each team, such as a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. We believe it's very important for our community and our students to be involved, especially in something as great as athletics. Our athletics program has been very successful in the last couple of years, Bayan said. Last year, we had all of our teams making huge record-breaking seasons, and so we want to make sure that we are supporting them in every aspect, whether it's being on the field, on the court, off the field, or in the classroom. Everything that is donated during Athletics Giving Day will be going towards athletic teams and scholarships. And the theme is 4-3-2, where champions live, he added. Bayan said they hope to get the community behind this effort. It makes a huge impact on our athletic teams, and any donation, no matter how small or how large, will make a huge impact in the lives of our student athletes, Bayan said.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.